All right, so unlike Odo and Quark's adventures on the mountain, it is actually very hot where we are.
And flat.
We're in Kansas. We're not in Kansas. And I'm also fighting off strep throat, so I'm running my air conditioner. So if you can hear a little bit of a noise, that is why.
No, it's atmosphere so that it sounds like the wind so that we can... It's like the holodeck.
I don't want to suffer, and I don't want to make myself sicker. So
and I don't want to suffer either.
You're going to have to deal with it. The Ascent.
Yeah. We have another week where we have a pair of very different episodes. The Ascent is very standalone. It's just a character thing. It has no real plot to it. It's simply Odo and Quark need to get up a mountain, and Nog and Jake are having a quarrel. But it's a very strong character episode. The other, Rapture, is an extremely plot-heavy one, which is so deeply tied to the meta, to the larger arcs of the story. And
it's funny because so Richard, I think last week texted me and said, "Hey, so can I say
yes?"
So Richard texted me and was like, "Hey, so my boyfriend wants to watch a DS9 episode. He's intrigued, and do you think a one coming up would be good?" And I said, "Well, I think Rapture would be great." No, I said the Ascent because it really didn't have much to do with anything. I mean, certainly the Nog and all the character stuff is kind of in there, but you can make sense of it.
I was able Rapture to explain who Quark and Odo were in a couple of minutes. I explained about, you know, the changelings, and I said, you know, I was able to explain, oh, Odo's recently become human because he's the Dominion feels he's betrayed it, and he's thrown his fate in with the humans. So, and that was all that was needed to explain that. Yeah, and I watched Rapture by myself, and I mean, that was leaps and bounds an episode I liked so much more, just because it is the culmination of so many plots, because it is setting up so many other things, but it would have been impossible to describe that.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it.
It would have taken a while. It would have
been
taken, you know, a summary of the past 5 seasons, so.
Well, I think it's weird, because so the Ascent is... I don't know. It's strange. I never remember what episode the Nog and Jake subplot was in, because it's very slight. I think that, you know,
I didn't really. I mean, I thought it was funny to have that subplot. You know, it's nice to see Nog so hyper disciplined, and I like that their dynamic is now reversed. Now Nog is the one who is more adult in some ways, more disciplined, more straight-laced, and Jake is the one who wants to relax and have fun and go out.
I spent the entire time that they were on screen wondering how their quarters were structured, because they went in on the right side when they first entered it, and then another time they entered it on the left side, so apparently it has two front doors.
Well, I figure it's the kind of thing where it's like there's like a middle area, and then it like it left and right, and you know there's like a division, and then it goes into a common area.
No, it was like they had a bed on the left side and a bed on the right side. There was a door on the left side, a door on the right side, but it didn't seem like they actually had bedrooms. And then in the middle, there was a common area with a replicator and like the couch and stuff. But they mentioned a bedroom at some point. They didn't mention bedroom. So I'm like, are they sharing a bedroom? But why are there two beds? Why are there no walls?
I mean,
how are there entrances and exits on both sides? Like, it was just very bizarre.
I'm not
an
architect.
I just find the whole structure of the Cardassian space station to be very
odd. I was about to say that, but that is kind of the point of it. There are a lot of weirdnesses to the... That was one of the... For example, in the pilot episode, talking about how where the command center is higher up and they're, you know, Federation, it's not... They're not used to that kind of a structure. So, yeah, maybe there is a weirdness to a Cardassian bedroom that could be explained completely through Cardassian psyche.
I should talk to Garrick about it. Well, I think that...
He's a simple tailor, not an architect.
Well, yeah, well, that's true. I also think that, I mean, at some point I do want to talk about the fact that Ops is not nearly as important to Star Trek Deep Space Nine as the Bridge of the Enterprise is to either one of those previous shows. But we can talk about that at some point. Yeah, I think that, you know, yeah, you're right. I mean, Nog has come a long way. I think that, well, one of the ways that I want to get into this is I want to ask you, because when Nog was a character introduced on the show back in the first season, you know, he was fine. I don't think you liked him or disliked him. He was just
the Jake's friend, really.
Right. And now he is coming into his own. He's a very different character. And I think that, at least in term, we'll definitely talk about this with Rapture as well and Sisko's kind of journey into really accepting the role of the emissary.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a show where characters grow and change dramatically more so than TOS certainly or TNG. So are you,
I mean,
are you happy with where Nog is?
Yeah, and it makes sense. And there is a, there was, when Rom comes in to talk to Sisko and he's, I love that he's convinced that his son's become a changeling because that's the only possible reason for. But, you know, Sisko basically said, yeah, that's what happens after your first year in the academy. It is very, Nog, for all of his faults, knows exactly what he represents in a lot of ways. He knows that he is the first Ferengi to join to join Starfleet, and he knows that to a degree all eyes are on him. So he is kind of having to act. There are very high standards that he has to live up to, and he is living up to them in every single way that he can. I mean, it's not that different from Rom's wanting to do so as well as he is in the engineering. I mean,
or Worf.
Yeah, exactly. The two, but you know, obviously Rom's behavior has rubbed off on his son, but yeah, there is a degree to which I think generally, when you have your first year of Starfleet, it is probably extremely rulesy. It's probably pretty military, at least, especially compared to what everybody is used to. And so, yeah, you know, if you've ever had a friend go to boot camp, you know, for any branch of the service, yeah, usually when...
No, I don't have friends like that.
When they're, you know, I've had a couple, and when they come back, they're always a lot more disciplined, and then... Because it is such an intensive training, and you are, you know, the training you into that discipline is kind of the point of it. So that's where Nog is. As he goes through the program, as he gets closer to graduation, as he, you know, does better, he is going to relax. I mean, we see all of the adult characters on the various series have a manner of discipline, but one which is still their own personality. Nog is just young.
Yeah, well, I think you see that in all of the Star Trek shows with the way ensigns act in general. They are a little bit more buttoned up than other officers. But
they frankly have a little less leeway to, you know, Picard, Kirk, Riker. You know, these people can go off book if they want to because they're at a rank where they can be trusted. Obviously, an ensign needs to earn that a bit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, you don't have judgment. You don't have all that kind of stuff that you get from experience, obviously. Well, yeah, I think you're right. And I also, you know, it does make me a little bit maybe sad that we're not going to see Nog like as an actual Starfleet officer because, of course, you know, assuming that Starfleet Academy is a four-year program and he went in the fourth year of DS9, you know, by the time he finishes, it'll be after the show ends. So,
I mean, maybe that could be a cute thing for the new series. You know, there could be an episode where they meet up with Nog as he is an adult working, you know, on a starship. That might be a nice little callback.
We'll have to see. I don't know when it's going to take place or anything, but and I think that, you know, it is nice because I think that the show kind of has forgotten at some points that Jake exists. And so I think that it's nice that they give him a subplot, which isn't horrible. Like in The Muse, for example, he's just kind of, he's coming into his own. He's becoming an adult. He wants to move out of his father's house and go off and be a little messy and sit around and write and play Domjot. And his friend is a little, you know, it's a classic odd couple story.
Yeah. And I know who's, you know, I certainly, you have your first apartment with your roommate and it is always very different. And, you know, I could criticize that plot line for ending just because Sisko says, all right, I declare this fight over, you know, be friends again. And they, to a degree, they are 18-year-old kids who are best friends. They are going to get
and
over
if,
there.
And if anybody can do that, it's Sisko.
Oh, yes. You know, it makes sense within their characters, I guess. It's a cute little sitcom plot. And I think the show does the cute little sitcom plot well.
I think it does it well. I think it does it a lot better than TNG ever did, certainly.
Yes.
And I
in general, Deep Space Nine does comedy better than TNG. And we've said that a lot of times. And I find the comic plots very good. A lot of times they're given out to people like Quark, who is able to handle the comedy.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. I think Armin Shimerman's a very good comic actor. Yeah. We've seen that in the past. We'll see that in the future. That's not really a spoiler. No, they don't have any more Ferengi episodes in the next 3.5 years. But I think the other thing, too, about it is that, you know, if you look at the comedy in Deep Space Nine, it's usually, or at least this type of comedy, the sort of light comedic stuff that is very character based, they're not really trying to make it funny. You know, the humor is organically coming out of the characters' interactions. And so, you know, Jake and Nog are not throwing jokes at each other like they would be on a sitcom, for example. They're just, you know, they're interacting in their normal fashion. That two friends that have not seen each other for a year, Nog has had a very different life situation than Jake has had, certainly, and you know Jake is not used to it, and I think that all makes sense. You know, my only one concern about that plot line though is that Jake is still kind of a cipher. I mean, we don't know that much about him, and I guess that's part of the point of the episode, is that he's trying to come into his own a little bit.
It's just coming off of the episode a few weeks ago where he and Bashir were on that planet, and he essentially becomes an orderly for the duration of this. Mm-hmm. I think it is very possible that if Jake may not be a novelist, he may end up becoming a war reporter. Like, I honestly think that, based on the insights that he is able to go from that, if you want, based on the access, frankly, that he has to certain high-level military personnel and connections, I think that's kind of where I see Jake going for that, but...
Yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the Quark and Odo stuff? Because
this wasn't a great episode, but it was a fine episode. I think it was – it felt like a better – again, knowing what's going to come up in the next episode is just all plot and just about, the crashing of about 10, plates that have been put up over the past 5 years. Having an episode that's just characters in a situation where this is Quark and Odo in the depths of their honesty for each other and realizing what exactly their friendship is. And I think getting to them to that point at the very end when they're saying, "When I said I hated you, I meant every word," and Odo agrees and they both kind of laugh. I loved that bit because that shows the two of them understand their friendship on its own terms. And I think that's very important. They have become very self-aware and aware of each other at this point.
For me, the ascent always feels like the culmination of their relationship in some ways. And I'm always disappointed by Rapture starting out with Odo once again arresting Quark for no real reason. Because it does feel like they kind of got past that in this episode.
Yeah.
And, also the revelation, I think, that's supposed to be a lot more important than perhaps it comes across in this episode. Because, frankly, who the fuck remembers who the Orions are except for, super Trekkies. But the Orions are something that are mentioned in the original series a couple of times.
Yeah, the only reason that I frankly knew who the Orions were in this is because if you're a patron, you will have heard our episode on the novel Federation, which does feature the Orions as an antagonist in part of it. And so that's the only reason I remember that they were a player in the world.
Yeah, so the Orions, just to refresh Richard's memory, so they're the green aliens, the dancing one from the cage way back.
Okay.
And then also in the menagerie, because, they use the clips. And then they also say that what's the episode? Journey to Babel, that the Orion was the one that was behind the assassination attempt of Sarek. So,
but we haven't really, as far as I know, they haven't been a part of Next Generation or Deep Space Nine to this point.
No, they haven't. And so, I think maybe there's been a couple of oblique mentions of them in TNG or DS9 so far.
I mean, I got, to the effect, I got it. I just mentally replaced it with the Mafia in a way, and that's kind of the function that they serve in this episode.
Well, it's one of those things that I think is a lot more important than it's made out to be, primarily because nobody really knows what the fuck the Orion Syndicate is. And that's one of the pitfalls of this sort of episodic storytelling, is that they haven't really built up the Orion Syndicate into anything. And so the name is dramatic enough, I suppose, and Syndicate, that sounds bad. So I think if you it's not that important, but I think it does sort of speak to the way in which the episode is kind of half-baked.
Well, let me ask you, are the Orions going to be part of the rest of DS9 to any degree? Okay.
No, they're not. I mean, they're kind of mentioned a couple more times.
Again, maybe it's a side thing, but it wouldn't have been difficult to put that in at some point during the season. They've been all right with seeding things.
I mean, I know that Quark has mentioned them before at some point, but they have not registered. And so I think that that's kind of the important thing. And also the fact of the matter is, I mean, the Orions are also very visually distinctive. So if they had had an Orion at some point on the show, you would probably remember them a lot more.
Yeah, when you say the green alien lady, I remember the, you know, that it, oddly enough that, you know, the green skinned alien lady is kind of one of those cliches of Star Trek in a way, and yet she's only in that one episode.
Yeah, they actually do appear in Enterprise, I think in the fourth season.
Yeah, but
so there's that, you know, for you to look forward to.
Hooray. That's kind of a hallmark of how distinct that you know, character is.
Well, that's what I'm getting at is, like, you know, it's treated as this very important moment because, of course, you know, Odo doesn't actually know why Quark is wanted for this trial or whatever. And so he's like, okay, let's go. And then he says, oh, if I knew the Orion Syndicate was involved, I would have had the Defiant guarded by Worf and all this kind of stuff. And of course, as it turns out, Quark is not a suspect in any way. He's not being accused of anything. He's actually a witness in this trial instead, because the Orion Syndicate, and it turns out, of course, that he could not buy his way into the Orion Syndicate because Quark is not successful enough to buy his way into the Orion Syndicate. And at that point, it seems like the episode is going down a road where they're saying Odo is realizing that Quark is not the criminal mastermind that Odo thinks he is. But it kind of queers their whole relationship in a way, because I don't really know why. Like, Odo's always been portrayed as a very, very good investigator. He's always been portrayed as very, very competent and almost preternaturally competent, to be honest. Yeah. And so him thinking that Quark is a much better criminal than Quark actually turns out to be seems to be a pretty significant piece of information that negatively impacts Odo's reputation, but the episode doesn't really seem to realize that.
To this point, Odo has always hung around Quark. He's, you know, because yes, to a degree, if something shady is going around on the station, Quark knows about it. He is the local guy, and he knows everybody that's in there. It's his business to know everybody. And so, yes, that has been Odo's pretext for hanging around Quark so much. Obviously, it's also an excuse to hang out with Quark, just as, you know, Odo and Kira had the weekly reports. That was, you know, that's just their excuse to go, you know, go and have coffee and hang out together. So I get the sense that Odo kind of knows all about it. He knows, previously to this, I think he would know exactly what level of criminal Quark is.
I don't know, though. The episode seems to say that he doesn't, though.
Yeah, so maybe this is one of those. I mean, this is a half-baked episode, I guess.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, the original conception for the episode, as I understand it, was they wanted to do a version of Waiting for Godot.
Okay.
With Quark and Odo, which is like, how do you do that?
Waiting for a rescue that they don't know is going to come or not?
Well, that was kind of what it got turned into. They originally wanted to do something where Quark and Odo were waiting for Sisko to bring them a runabout. And that would have been the entire episode, which frankly sounds like it either would have been wonderful or incredibly terrible. And then it morphed into this episode, which it's fine. I mean,
Terms of a visually distinct episode, terms of worry, and, you know, we know that they're going to get through it, but at the same time, this is Odo. I mean, we've seen Odo get worse and worse things happen to him since he's become human.
Well, that's the other thing, is I do wish they would have dealt with that a bit more in this episode, you know, because Odo doesn't really seem to be that affected by the fact that his leg is broken.
This is somebody who was fascinated by carbonation the first time he tried it. So, yeah, that degree of pain, frankly, requires, you know, we could see Sisko breaking his leg and being calm about it, because Sisko has been very trained in these ways. Sisko can deal with pain. Sisko knows.
And also, frankly, Sisko has felt pain a lot more than Odo.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Odo is the first, you know, Odo should be acting like a kid from this in a way.
Well, I think less like a kid and maybe more like a person who's horrified by what's happening to him, but he doesn't act like that either way. Yeah. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those weird things. I don't know if the episode necessarily knows exactly what beat to play in the Quark and Odo scenes. Like, it seems like it really knows what to do with the Nog and Jake stuff, but it doesn't know what to do with the the actual part of the episode that is supposedly the A plot, which is weird. Like, the tone of it always seems a little off to me.
This is somebody who likes Quark and Odo and knows Quark and Odo, but isn't completely inside their heads. We've seen certain episodes which the writer gets this character very well, or the writer really understands what it means to be Worf, or this, you know, writer gets exactly how the Trill work. I don't think that's the case with Odo and Quark in this episode.
And I also think, too, I mean, not for nothing, but I also really don't buy that. They make the journey to the top of the mountain a little too difficult. I mean, will Quark really be able to do that? He doesn't seem like a man who exercises.
No.
I know I'm picking nits, but...
No.
It's a little... I don't know. There's just not that much there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an episode that this could have been a good, great episode, but it was a good episode. I will say, because my boyfriend ended up really liking the episode, he thought it was a lot of fun. And then, when I was watching the next episode, he didn't watch it with me, but he was in the other room. He was like, oh, you know, what happened to Odo and Quark in this episode? You know, and that kind of stuff. So I would say it is a very good introduction to the series because it does give a little sense of who these characters are. Obviously, the whole Jake, Nog, Sisko, you know, relationship was very clear to pick up on and who these people were. So it was accessible in that way, but this is not the best that the series gets.
No.
And especially compared to Rapture, which I thought was fantastic, it's not a great episode.
Yeah, I agree with all that. But I think one of the last things I want to talk about before we move on to Rapture is... One of the things that I really like about this episode in particular is Rom and Sisko sitting down to talk about their sons.
Yeah.
Which is such a, like, those characters have never really had any interactions with each other before.
Yeah.
Maybe once or twice. They don't know each other very well. But there is this element of, we both have sons that are friends, and so we need to figure out a way to make this work for them.
Yeah, they have really like an in-law almost relationship to a degree. You know,
and it's such a good scene because the actors do play off each other very well, and I think it's one of those nice moments where a television show sort of transcends its writing, because these are two characters that I think these are two actors that really know the characters that are playing.
Yeah.
And they're able to imbue the dialogue with some feeling and emotion that is probably not there on the page, but they're able to really do a good job with it. So I really like that.
Yeah.
For that, at least.
They both have a lot of common... It almost makes me think of my own parents' interactions with my friend's parents that they may not have like quite liked.
But exactly.
At the end of the day, you know, both sets care about their kids and, you know, want the best. And so they are at least aligned.
Yeah. And one last thing before we move on to Rapture is that Quark wants to play Fizbin with Odo.
Ah, so it's a real game now.
Apparently. I'm surprised you remember what it is.
It was the first note I wrote. Look at it.
No, it's the second one.
No, that's the title of it.
Whatever.
Odo likes bodice rippers. That's another note I wrote.
All right, let's talk about Rapture.
And my first note about Rapture is pleasure mazes with a surprise in the center.
Yeah, that was not great.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get this out of the way before we actually talk about Rapture, because there's a lot to talk about here. New uniforms. You said you didn't like them in First Contact.
Yeah.
They're here.
Okay. That's
you all right with that?
I God has granted me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And my wisdom tells me that this is something I need to be serene about.
Do you not like them because you don't like them or because you don't like change?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
I like the old uniforms because I like the color coding.
You still have the color coding. It's still there.
It's not as... It's more subtle.
Yeah. Like DS9.
I know. It is very much a shit's going down uniform, I will say.
Yeah.
Like, no, now they're dressed mostly in black, and it's very sleek.
Black and gray.
Yeah, this is not going to be leisurely and talky anymore.
Nope.
Yeah. This episode is the culmination of stuff that began in the pilot. I mean, we have Bajor's application to the Federation finally being accepted, which is something that came from the pilot. That was the premise of the show, essentially. And
this was the last episode.
Yeah.
What an interesting way to go. No, you know, I am. Sorry, I'm chewing on ice and it's making a really loud noise. I'm sorry, I'm just in a weird place today because I'm sick. Sorry, listeners. It's kind of that, like, the Bajor being accepted to the Federation just kind of, like, comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, it hasn't it hasn't been mentioned in, like, a season, and it's just suddenly like, yeah, they're in. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What is happening here? It's portrayed as extremely low-key, and I don't know why.
Well, I have to say, there was a degree, especially this episode takes place over a fairly long period of time. It's several months, I would say it's implied that, you know, there's some, I mean, there is certainly passage of time that happens in this. There is time.
It's like a week or two.
No, it feels like a longer period. It's not a day or two.
It's not.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, you could look at star dates and say it's not that long.
That's okay. Fine. Well, either way, I don't know. This was one of those episodes that I wasn't sure if it was an illusion episode or not because of the way that it felt very fractured in some ways.
I could see that.
Yeah, and we've certainly seen, though I did elect to trust it because, frankly, these actions happening in real life are a lot more interesting than, you know, although I didn't know if it was going to end with, you know, snapping back and it was all a vision from him from the beginning or what, but either way.
Well, he does have this sort of manic energy throughout the episode that is very unlike Sisko and like Sisko at the same time.
I mean, basically, Bashir says that, you know, your neural pathways are very intense, so you're, you know, having heightened sensations.
He calls it post-neural shock syndrome.
I mean, Sisko is essentially high throughout this episode. Like, he is acting like somebody who was on a trip, which he is, and it's very frightening, the places that he goes on it.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because, okay, I think I mentioned this probably in the last, you know, Major Bajor episode or the one before that
Major Bajor.
They kind of dropped a lot of the Major Bajor. They decided to drop a lot. Well, they didn't really decide, but they were kind of forced to by the studio because the studio didn't like the Bajor-centric episodes because they didn't really do well with the fans, and specifically the Bajor religion story episodes.
Just like my most favorite bit.
Well, yeah, you grew up Catholic. I get it. So did I. You know, they're interesting. I like their. No. I like their. No, I mean, I do. I do find this stuff interesting. But
and in terms of like mystery and prophecies, there are a lot within that. But
yes, and I think that's where I want to go with it. Is if you look at the evolution of Sisko into the emissary, you know, it completely makes sense from a personal perspective because. If you think back to an episode from, like, the third season where the Cardassian scientists come and they have this whole thing with the wormhole and there's, you know, and Sisko is very much like, well, we can't just do things because this prophecy is telling us to or not. And Kira is very much like, yeah, prophecy. Yeah. You know, and as it turns out, Sisko at the end of the episode is kind of surprised that this actually kind of comes to pass, right? And so that's kind of one of his first forays into Bajoran mysticism to some degree. And then you get that episode Starship Down where Kira and Sisko are on the bridge of the Defiant and Kira's like, you don't accept your role as emissary. And, you know, Sisko's kind of like, you know. And then we get to Accession where the other guy comes through the wormhole and says he's the emissary. And that's the first episode, I think, where Sisko really is fighting for it. He realizes that he's the one who is the emissary, whether or not he wants to be. And that's also a very important step on that journey. And now you get this episode where it starts out with him finding this painting of this lost Bajoran city and et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, that's obviously just a, you know, that's a MacGuffin to get into the actual episode, which is much more about Bajor's admittance into the Federation and all this kind of stuff and Sisko's journey in that. But at this point now, Sisko has not only accepted his role as the emissary. He's full on. He is having, you know, this vision goes on for a week or two. He's having these, you know, interactions with people.
Yeah, the scene where he's going and he's like basically blessing everybody and, oh, you don't belong here. Go back. It will be fine. She, you know, he forgives, you know, all of that.
Let's be clear about this. I mean, he's not even doing it to Bajorans. He does it to the Starfleet Admiral.
Oh, yeah. No, he is essentially being Jesus. He is Bajoran Jesus in that scene.
But I think, you know, to what degree Sisko is touched by the prophets, quote unquote, or not, I think is something that is probably not that interesting to talk about because obviously he is, at least in the context of the show.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I like about the way Deep Space Nine handles that is that there is a very, very mystical faith-based, you know, approach to the prophets slash wormhole aliens. And there's also a very scientific approach to them. And I think that what Sisko is doing is kind of bridging those two.
Well, yeah, there is that Clark's Law, any sufficiently advanced technology is the same as magic. I mean, that is kind of what's happening there. It's irrelevant whether the prophets are gods or are aliens that are so above us. Either way, they are beings of extreme wisdom, let's say, and they do have these, you know, whether he understands, you know, for example, that the Admiral's son and he have had a falling out, but everything is okay because of a divine revelation or because he has suddenly developed psychic powers. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. And I also think that you have to look at it and say, well, of course, this could be the case because the wormhole aliens are out of time and they can see all kinds of different stuff and whatever. And I think for the context of the episode, it's more important that he's scaring people, frankly.
Yeah, he's scaring his friends to a degree.
He's not scaring Kira, though.
Well, yeah, because Kira's ready for this.
He's even scaring Kywin to a degree, though, I think.
Yeah,
because
Kywin is I've always loved Kywin as a character.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't like her. I don't want to be in the same room with her. That was actually the first Wynn and Kira scene. You know, my boyfriend was in the room, and I'm like, oh, my God, that character is the biggest snake. He's like, wow. You know, and it's like it's the two of them, whenever they are on screen together, are phenomenal. They have the actresses have wonderful chemistry together. But Wynn is very fascinating in this episode because we are seeing her utterly lost.
Yeah.
I think that part of her is genuine.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that she, you know, she's never been someone that accepts Sisko as the emissary.
Yeah.
But I think that she is so lost in this episode primarily because, well, number one, Bajor is being admitted into the Federation, which she never wanted.
Yeah.
And she actively sort of plotted against in a lot of different episodes,
yeah,
most notably in the Circle episodes. And then I also think, too, that she is having a crisis of conscience or a crisis of faith here because she now believes Sisko is the emissary.
Sisko has done the equivalent of finding Noah's Ark, you know?
Yeah.
Or the Ark of the Covenant or something. Like, this is an undeniable thing that he has done, and yet it is making her question it all.
I mean, look at that scene between Kira and Kywin on the promenade where Kywin reveals that she was in a Cardassian prison camp for 5 years.
Yeah.
And she, you know, and I think that's what I like about this episode so much because it really does shade Kywin in a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that as the show goes on, Gul Dukat becomes more and more of a one note sociopath, and we can disagree or agree about that, but he's not in this episode, so it doesn't really,
yeah.
I don't want to go down a rat hole about that. But I think that my only point of bringing him up is that while the show is kind of treating him more and more as a one-note character, I think that the show is shading Kywin, treating this character as more of a real person, and making her less of a, you know, as our characters have had more interactions with Kywin, they're learning more about Kywin, her moods, her personalities, her beliefs, her thoughts. And, you know, perhaps coming around to her to some degree.
Whatever we can say about Kywin is that we have never been given any opportunity to question her piety or her willing, her desire to understand the words of the prophets and to carry them out. Everything she's done has been for that, and revealing that she was imprisoned and tortured for her beliefs and for teaching, you know, her beliefs. That does attest to the conviction of it. She did suffer under the Cardassians, and she does, you know, Kywin may have some wrong ideas about the best direction for Bajor, but she is doing everything that she feels is the best for Bajor because, you know, she does want Bajor to stand on its feet. When she's saying 5 years is too short in between, you know, the Cardassians and the Federation, you know, that's a genuine opinion of hers.
Yes.
That is a genuine feeling.
And it doesn't seem to be one that is solely hers either.
Yes. And it's one that does, frankly, make a lot of sense. They do want to, you know, for example, the I forget what they were called, but the, you know, their castes basically.
Yeah,
from that episode.
They're Daharas or Dahalas or something like that.
Yeah. I mean that
they're Jamaharones. I don't know.
That's just one area of the culture that was lost, and obviously that episode decided that was better off lost.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of things that Bajor wants to reinstate or do on their own terms. I mean, that's been one of the conflicts since the beginning of that. I mean, Kira has that moment when she is at the party and, you know, talks about, you know, 5 years ago, I didn't think I'd be celebrating this. And I didn't think the Federation was the right. And we have talked about her not believing that the Federation was the right path for Bajor, but ultimately coming around that. I mean, I really liked that speech because it's a very nice acknowledgement of the character arc that Kira has gone through.
Well, yeah, because she very much did not want Bajor to be in the Federation. One of the things that I think is most maybe interesting slash problematic about this episode is the way in which Sisko decides to torpedo the admission of Bajor into the Federation. Now, again, that is the one thing about the episode that I think is a little weird, is a little kind of an off note, is how understated everything is about Bajor's admittance into the Federation.
Yeah.
You know, again, they haven't mentioned it in a while. It comes out of nowhere. And the
we were given the impression that it was going to be even longer, or that Bajor really wasn't ready. And, you know.
And that also seems like, frankly, they would make a much bigger deal about it. And so I can
also, where the hell has Shakar been?
Well, okay, so
because you'd think he would be there.
They wanted to have this is again a television thing.
Yeah,
they wanted to have Shakar there, but they couldn't justify hiring the actor.
Wow. Well, I mean,
because of the budget, really.
Yeah, given the number of, I mean,
because he would probably have not done much in this episode, and you know, it costs a few tens of thousands of dollars to put an actor in an episode. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, you do have Kai Winn, and you do have Cassidy Yates and the Admiral, and there are a bunch more guest stars,
a lot of extras and things like that. So it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But I knew this would be a hell of an episode when I saw as Kai Winn as Cassidy Yates in the credits.
Kai Winn as Cassidy Yates.
And Cassidy Yates.
Now I'm imagining Sisko and Kai Winn dating.
Aww.
Again, I'm sorry. This is a weird episode. I'm very sick. Yeah, I think that, you know, the other thing, too, is that if you look at the ways in which Sisko, I mean, the whole thing is very, very low key. And I can kind of see why you thought it was kind of a dream, because
it
doesn't feel big enough.
Yeah.
And I guess to some degree that kind of makes sense, because maybe nobody was really into this idea. I don't know. Like,
I mean, you know, to a degree it's, I mean, the biggest party scene is at Quark's with the banner and all of that, you know, welcome Klingons and all
that. And it's a great joke that he has a Klingon banner ready, you know.
Yeah. but I don't know. I feel like this is an episode which is going to look differently after I know where it's going, because there is a lot of prophecy and there is a ton of setup going on in this episode, even as they are closing a couple of arcs, specifically these visions about the locusts. Probably they're meaning the Dominion, the changelings, you know, the Jem'Hadar, but...
Well, it doesn't get paid. No, I'm kidding. It totally gets paid off. I don't know how much of later stuff they had planned out in this episode. I feel like probably they did, because we don't have, I mean, I don't think it's a big secret. Something's going to happen with the Dominion.
Yeah.
They've been building to something for a couple of seasons.
I have
now
to admit, I have seen the phrase Dominion War mentioned in certain places.
Well, Sisko says it in this episode.
Yeah. So, I mean, but, you know, it is very clear that there is going to be some kind of war with the Dominion. And
whether or not it's an out and out war,
I don't know what
or
it's
whether
look
it's
like
some sort of Cold War, whether it's some sort of, you know, skirmish, who knows, but we'll find out.
Or even if they just, you know, use it to refer to all of the hostilities and the back and forth. But
it could be a lot of different things.
Something is going to happen. I mean, the questions that we are left with is, what exactly do these locusts represent? You know, in the vision that Sisko has, they leave Bajor and they're going towards Cardassia. And I love Kira's delivery of, well, Bajor's going to be safe, right? You know, where she's like trying to find the bright side, even though she knows this is bad no matter what.
I mean, this is definitely something that we will revisit when we find out how this is sort of paid off, because how it's paid off is very, very well done.
Yeah, and because my main question is, why is joining the Federation, the badge, going to make things worse for Bajor? You would think, I mean, either way, you would think if they're outside of, if the Dominion is outside of Federation, outside of the Federation and the Dominion attacks, the Federation might not want to get involved because then they don't want open hostilities. But if the Federation is there anyway, they will be very well protected. You would think it would make more sense to, for Bajor's sake.
Well, I will let you say that much.
Yeah.
I think your thought process as a new viewer is very interesting, and that's why I'm you know,
yeah, but
I think it's interesting to talk about, but at the same time, I don't want to talk about it too much because get paid off very nicely.
That's the thing. It's very clear. They know what it means. I don't, and you know, it's very – this is an episode which is supposed to leave me with a bunch of questions. You know, does Bahala
– Well, because to some degree, this is not torpedoing the concept of the series, but it is changing it, you know, because let's not forget Sisko's mandate as told sternly by Picard and Emissary was to bring Bajor into the Federation by any means short of violating the Prime Directive. And, well, you could argue in this episode that he did the exact opposite
of what
he was ordered to do. And I think that it's interesting that, you know, the Admiral at the end of the episode makes it very clear that the only reason Sisko is not being drummed out of Starfleet is because of his role as emissary.
Yeah.
Because Bajor would not stand for it. So it's almost like the thing that he was fighting against for 5 years is now protecting him, which, you know, makes sense, but it's also kind of a different way for the show to go.
No, this is an episode which seems to resolve a couple plot lines only to reveal that they're actually a lot more complicated than we thought.
Yes, because you could definitely see a version of DS9 that, okay, it's year 5, let's bring Bajor into the Federation.
Yeah.
Let's get Kira and Odo into Starfleet uniforms.
Yeah.
You know, let's make it all happy and nice. And that would probably have been a version of the show without the Dominion.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it would have been a very different show.
That's maybe the show that we expected from season 1, but season 2 brought in the Dominion as a concept and made things. This is, like I said, there is a scene about the there is a sense of the Federation being not quite precarious but facing threats from all sides. We have the Klingons, we have sometimes the Romulans do bad things. The Dominion, certainly. The Cardassians, you know.
Sometimes.
The Borg are still out there. You know, there are so many, you know, antagonists to the Federation. And that's only the major ones, you know. How many species just appear for an episode or two?
Yeah, yeah.
So
just wait until season 7 when the Gorn happen.
Yeah. No. Well, I know, you know, you keep telling me Breen is going to happen.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but they're just kind of... I like the Breen. They're cool. they talk like weird.
I haven't seen them.
Weird Breen. That's how they talk. Okay, let's talk about Cassie Yates. She's back.
Oh, yeah.
So this is kind of a weird episode to bring her back in.
Yeah, but one that at the end of it does make a lot of sense.
Well, how so?
Well, I don't know. I think Sisko needs to have as much of a complete life to really hit the stakes of what he would be sacrificing. I mean, the scene where she and Jake are arguing, like, you know, and she's like, look at your son, look what you have. I mean, she needs to be there in order to give that scene the emotional resonance of it. You know, Sisko is finally – Cassidy Yates has served her debt to society. You know,
yeah.
Three of them are going to be a family. He has – you know, he's – completed one of the goals of his main mission and now is going to go into an exciting new phase. You know, he is going to... Sisko has everything right now, but he is giving it up for these visions. And I don't know.
Or is he?
Well, that's the...
I mean, I think that's the question at the heart of the episode, because I could certainly see that interpretation of it. I could also see the interpretation of it as Sisko is really becoming himself more fully.
Yeah.
And I think that when you... The scene that is key to me... Well, there's two scenes that are key to me about this specific journey of Sisko's. But the first one is when Cass Yates appears in the holosuite.
Yeah.
And Sisko is just openly happy to see her. There's no pretense. There's no anything. I know what you're going to say. A lot of that is informed by his visions and his sort of like brain disorder. If you go by that interpretation that Sisko is just sort of locked into the brainwave of the prophets, then he is more fully himself than at any point in his life. And him reacting to Cassidy like that has a lot more to do with what he wants out of life and how happy he is to see her than anything else. You know, he is not he's not acting as any sort of Starfleet officer at any point in that episode, in that scene. He is just, he is Sisko and he's the emissary and that's it.
I think, you know, the scene when Jake is first telling him, oh, Cassidy Yates is going by, and obviously, you know, to Jake, an 18-year-old who's pretty romantic, he thinks, this is great. You know, if I were in this situation, I would think everything was A-OK. And Sisko himself is a little, well, we'll see about that. And he is still, he is still in Starfleet officer mode, it's true. He is thinking about the fact that there are certain difficulties. He and Cassidy can't just pick up where they left off. There is a lot to say. She has, you know, been in prison. What is it? Do they still feel the same about it? And that him in that moment when he sees her is all of those inhibitions are by the wayside. And he's just kind of skipping all of the crap and, you know, but this is what I want. And, you know, I know this is what she wants too. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, he has a very strong clarity.
But also let's not forget that it is not just because he is under the influence, because he keeps her quarters for her for 6 months as well. And yes. So there is a part, there's always a part of him that wants her to come back.
Yeah, I would say it's more that, you know, he is very conflicted, but at this point, this helped him solve the conflict. And, you know, I don't think he, obviously, you know, which, what's going to.
Which is why it's really sad that we don't see her again for like a year.
Really? I was about to say, I don't know what happens, you know, further on, like this episode.
Yeah, she doesn't. She doesn't.
Family, but
she doesn't appear again until I think the midpoint of the sixth season.
Oh.
And that's only because the actress was on another show.
But is, you know, I guess time will tell. But am I to assume that, you know, we're just not seeing, you know, what's going on, but they're having a fine time in the meantime?
I don't know if they mention Cassidy Yates while she's not on the show. They may at some point, but she's, yeah. I mean, yeah. She doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they're like, well, Cassidy Yates is dead or, you know, she's,
no,
you
she's
know.
Getting, she's building her business back. She's settling in. She's
right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know. Maybe that was the whole reason for the Maquis thing is that she was busy on another show. I don't know, but. Well, I think the second key scene that I talked about there doesn't really have much to do with Cassidy Yates, but it's more about, you know, when the three of them, when Jake, Ben, and Cassidy are in his quarters and they're talking and they're trying to figure out what exactly is going on with him. And then Kai Winn appears and she's like, oh, I need you to help. You know, you need help and blah, blah, blah. And Jake is kind of like openly questioning the fact that Sisko is trusting Kai Winn now. And I think that that's the moment when Cassidy and Jake realize that Sisko, not that he's becoming a different person, but that he is maybe changing his priorities
to
some
degree. The two of them had a very detailed... Well, I mean, also think about this.
I will.
At some point, number one, Cassidy Yates made a bad decision based on being swayed by someone who wasn't very good to her. In the time of her time in prison, she has looked at she looked at how she got involved with the Maquis. She probably would not do that again. And so she sees Ben making that same kind of mistake, you know, trusting somebody that she shouldn't.
Yeah.
Look at Jake, who a little while ago got that writing lady to in the Muse to, at very major physical expense to Jake, gave him a very good gift of writing some of the best stuff he ever wrote. He sees his father essentially doing exactly what he did, going through something which is going to cause him great physical distress with a woman who does not have his best interest at heart.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be.
I mean, I think that definitely, obviously, and obviously we know from The Visitor that Jake is not going to do well without his father. Obviously, now that he, you know, Cassidy Yates is in the picture, she is probably never going to let him go wayward. But that said.
But I think that this is, I don't know, I feel like this is the first time where Jake and Cassidy at least kind of accept or begin to understand that, you know, Sisko's, I guess, relationship with the Bajorans or their relationship with the Prophets. I mean, yeah, obviously Jake does. I mean, Jake is still an 18-year-old kid. And at the end of the episode, he makes the decision to have Dr. Bashir operate on Sisko and take away his visions. And of course, that's very upsetting to Sisko. But I don't know that that was the wrong choice to make.
I mean,
I don't know if it was the right choice to make. I think it was the only choice that Jake could make and the only choice that he could be expected to make.
I think that, you know, when Kai Winn and Kira talk at the end and Kai Winn is saying, you know, that was the wrong decision. And Kira's like, yeah, but he is an 18-year-old kid who's worried about his father. Like, she, you know, Kira, but neither Kira nor Wynn would have made that decision. But I think Kira understands that we can't look at this from, you know, what I, Wynn, would do. We have to look at this from somebody without the training and experience that we've had. I mean,
well, I do wonder about that, though, because let's not forget, you know, I forget the name of the episode, but when Vedic Barayal was dying.
Yes.
And of course, this is very in line with Kai Wynn's character that she she doesn't necessarily, I mean, not that she doesn't care that one person is dying, but when they are in service to something larger, she will sacrifice that life to see that through. But Kira obviously did not want that to happen and was fighting against it. So,
well, you know, religion believes in martyrs, terrorism, secular terrorism doesn't.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. But, yeah, I think Kira in her time during the Cardassian occupation was more concerned with how to live than rather if I die in a greater cause. Certainly at least Kira was.
Yes, yeah. But I think the only point there is that I think Kira probably would have made the decision to save Sisko as well. Because I think that Kai Wynn doesn't really know Sisko, and the only times that she's ever really interacted with him, Sisko is, you know, basically told her off. And they don't like each other very much. Yeah. But, of course, Kai Wynn now likes him because he is basically saying what she has been saying all along. And, you know, yes, Kai Wynn is a snake and Kai Wynn is kind of an opportunistic character. But she is a little bit more shaded than that. Whereas Kira, I think, since she has a much more personal relationship with Sisko, you know, they've had dinner together and they joked around together and they work together every day. That, yes, Kira's religion and her faith are very important to her, but I also think that her friend and commanding officer and colleague are important to her as well. And so I don't know, you know, I think maybe that's one of the strengths of the episode is that you're never really sure what Kira's thinking about all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there are a lot of Judeo-Christian parallels, obviously, in this, in the, you know, figure of the emissary. But yet you think about... I mean, there is a lot of stuff, if I remember, from the Bible, you know, the whole, you know, get down from the cross and that kind of stuff. This is essentially, you know, Jake seeing the last temptation of Christ and saying, take it, you know, rather than go for the full, you know. And we don't even know, frankly, if this final vision would have killed Sisko or not. It is possible that the prophets know what they're doing, and yes, this is going to tax him greatly, and, you know, he's going to have a bad couple weeks, but at the end of the day, like, he's still pretty strong and in good, you know, physical condition. He'll recover.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. We'll see.
But I guess, you know, but the episode is very deliberate about that, leaving all of... This is very supposed... You know, obviously, yes, they want to stretch out certain revelations, and having him have the full vision would have answered some questions before they're ready to. But I like that sense of it's cut off before it's finished, and it's left very – it leaves us in an even more worried sense. You know, why can't Bajor, you know, join the Federation? What are these locusts? What's going to happen next?
We'll find out.
Yay! How far are we into the season then?
This was episode 10.
Okay.
So not that far. We still got 16 episodes.
Half.
16 episodes to go.
Okay.
So 8 episodes of the podcast. And then we get to the sixth season.
It's 2 months.
Yes, it is 2 months. Yeah. Well, if you have any thoughts on either one of the episodes we just discussed, The Ascent and Rapture, please leave a comment on the post for this episode of the podcast at trekaboutshow.com. You can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/trekaboutshow. Where you can find out all about our podcast. You can find out all about the ways in which you can support it. And you can also find out how to get to listen to our patron specials. The one for we did for July is a threefer. It's a look at Spock, Data, and Odo.
Three of our favorite characters.
You can also find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Trek About Show. You can also leave us an iTunes review, which would be very, very helpful. And you can also listen to our other podcast, Trek About Presents, which is releasing tomorrow, our episode about Ghostbusters 2. All right. Next week, we are going to be talking about episodes 11 and 12 of the fifth season of Deep Space Nine, The Darkness and the Light, and The Begotten.
Ew.